Welcome to Christian Historical Fiction Talk. If it's happening in the world of Christian historical fiction, it's happening right here. I'm your host, author Liz Tolsma. I am so glad to have you along for this episode with Valerie Fraser Lussey. And it's so wonderful to catch up with her. She's been here before. If I think of it, I will link it in the show notes to our previous conversation. But we just had a great time. She is the epitome of a Southern lady, just full of kindness and hospitality and a little bit of humor mixed in there. So you're going to love that interview that we have coming up in just a minute. If you're new here, welcome. I'm so glad to have you here. Please be sure to subscribe to Christian Historical Fiction Talk on your favorite podcasting platform so that you don't miss out on anything that we have coming up. We have some absolutely fantastic, top-notch, award-winning authors on the schedule for the rest of the year. So stick around and check them out as well. Also, you can find us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and Pinterest. I almost messed that up because this whole X thing is weird to me still, but I'm getting used to it. But we're all over social media. That's the whole point of it. And you can find us there. You'll at least know when a new episode releases. And we also try to have conversations over there about lots of different things. So please check us out on social media. If you are returning, welcome back. Always glad to have you here. And if you haven't done so yet, please head over to my website and check out my Patreon. I would really appreciate your support for the podcast so that we can keep this going, so that we can continue to have these wonderful guests join us every week. I know it's been a little hard to find, but my VA and I are in the process of sort of reworking my website, at least the homepage, to make that a little easier for you to find. So check that out. Okay, it is time now. We will transition from all of those preliminaries over to my wonderful chat and help me to welcome Valerie Fraser Lussey here to talk about her new book, Letters from My Sister. Welcome to the show, Valerie. It's so good to have you back with us today.
Oh, well, thank you. It's always great to visit with you, Liz.
We spent some wonderful time chatting before I hit record, so the listeners missed out on that, but why don't you take a minute and just reintroduce yourself?
Oh, sure. Well, let's see. I am an Alabama native, grew up here, lived here most of my life. I live in Birmingham with my husband, Dave, and a very large orange cat named Cheeto. I was in the magazine world for most of my working life. I worked for Southern Living Magazine and its parent company for many years, and I started writing fiction while I was still there. And I'm just released my fifth book with Revell. It's called Letters from My Sister, and working and far behind on book six. We won't tell my editor. So I'd always wanted to write fiction, and I just started doing it while I was still working and found an agent actually through Southern Living. We got assigned to a project together. So Leslie Stoker has been my agent all along, and I've been with Revell all along. And my books are all set in the South, and many of them have elements that come from my own family history, and they're all set in places that I have some connection to.
That sounds wonderful. And we'll talk about some of that as we go on here and delve into that a little bit more here. But your new book, as you mentioned, is Letters from My Sister, just has the most intriguing premise that I've heard in a long time. Can you tell us about the novel?
Well, sure. It was inspired by my maternal grandmother and her sister. They were the only girls in a house full of boys. They had a bunch of brothers, and their parents were pretty prosperous cotton farmers, and prosperous in the sense that they were in a little bitty community in Alabama. So we are not talking about, you know, Bill Gates wealth. We're talking about just a good family farm. And so when my grandmother was about a year or so before she died, and my mother asked her if she had any regrets, and she said, well, I wish I'd been more like Effie. That was her only sister who died before she did. And that really impressed me, because my grandmother was, her nickname was the Colonel. And, you know, you did what she said. She was the boss of the family, and the whole family revolved around her. So the idea that she admired someone enough that she wished she had been like her sister, who died before I was born, so I never knew Aunt Effie. But that relationship between those sisters kind of inspired me. And also their relationship with a black woman who had worked for their family, who ran the family household. Her name was Bama, and she inspired the character Pepsi in Letters from My Sister. So what happens in the book is the younger sister is Callie Bullock. Her older sister is Emmy. Emmy is very sure of her place in the world. She's a very traditional young Southern woman who just wants to marry the love of her life and make a life with him. Callie is much more of a seeker. She's questioning, she wants to understand the world around her, and she hasn't yet, when the book opens, she hasn't yet met the man who will change her life and help her find her path. But there's a mystery at the core of the book where Callie sees Emmy do something that she knows Emmy would never do. And then she subsequently has an accident that messes with her memory. And as she struggles to remember what she saw on this particular night, she becomes even more confused because the more she remembers, the more she realizes that she has seen her sister do something horrible that she believes in her heart and soul her sister would never do. And so it's kind of through their letters to each other when they're temporarily separated that all this sort of comes to a head. And eventually Callie figures out what happened to her sister. But it's really a story of family connections, of the relationships among a big family and their relationship to a black family that works for them. And they're all kind of mutually dependent on each other. But at the heart of it, it's these sisters who are so different from each other, but very, very close and very loving and trusting of each other. Callie kind of idolizes Emmy, and Emmy proves herself worthy of that. She's a very humble and kind person who loves and supports her sister. So it's part family saga. There's a love story for Callie and Emmy. And then there's a little bit of a mystery in there as we kind of figure out what Callie saw and what it really meant.
I love all those different aspects. So we have romance, we have sister familial relations, we have a mystery. So you kind of took everything that readers love and rolled it up into one book.
I hope so. I really do hope so. I'm just intrigued with it. I guess maybe because I feel like I grew up with a big family because my mother's family's huge, so I had a big extended family, but I don't have any siblings. So I don't have any idea what it would be like to grow up with a sister, but I know that they were very different, but very close, and in this house full of brothers. So it really created a bond, I think, between them as they grew up together.
My husband's an only child. My mom is an only child. And they have different answers for this question, but I'm going to ask you, did you ever wish that you had siblings?
I did. I kind of, oddly enough, I never wished for a sister. I thought it would be cool to have an older brother. I thought that would be great, which is weird because I'm so close to my older girl cousins. So I guess I thought I had enough sisters with them, but I always looked up to my older cousins, and we were as close as sisters, really. But yeah, I did. Actually, I wish I had siblings now. As you get older, you'd like to have a little help.
Yeah, that's for sure. This book is filled with grief and heartbreak. It's emotionally charged and sort of wrenching in a way. Was it really difficult for you to write? Did it drain your emotions?
In a way, yes. And I thought about changing some of the storyline, but it wouldn't have been really true to the characters if I had. And so when I first wrote, I won't, I'm trying not to give too much away, and I'm a blabbermouth, so I probably will. But there is a character that's particularly sad in the book. And when I first wrote that character, my editor read it and she said, I'm not upset enough. I'm not crying enough. I'm not grieving enough for this character. And so I rewrote that one. And I have had people tell me that, oh my goodness, I was so sad when I read this. But it's just kind of finding your way through it. I think I watched my grandmother go through a lot, and I knew through our family's stories what she had been through before I was born. She had lost a lot of people that she loved. She lost a child to diphtheria when he was only 3. Another one of her children got diphtheria, but miraculously did not die. Her husband was killed in an accident when he was only 47, and they had 8 children. 5 of them were still at home. So I saw her as an older woman. Of course, you know, when you're a kid, you think everybody's old. But I saw her as a senior woman who had suffered a lot, who had been through a lot, who had grown up with privilege, but had really been through a lot as a married woman and a mother. And so she tended to be pretty negative and pretty dark. And when I found she had saved some postcards between her and her sister. Her sister went to the University of Alabama during the summer to get certified as a teacher, and they wrote back and forth. And so those postcards were so lighthearted. You know, they're talking about a new blue dress or a new hat or what they're wearing to a social, you know, and those were in the early 1900s. And so it gave me just a little tiny glimpse of a different woman, of my grandmother as a girl, you know. And that really made me curious and want to explore what she might have been like. Of course, my story is fictional, but it's more the relationships that are based on things I heard about my grandmother and sister. And just, you know, the idea that you think you know somebody as well as your grandmother, you don't really know them at all because you don't know what they've been through. You don't know what they were like at 16. You know, you don't know. And so the idea that these people that you love and you think of in a particular role in your family, that they were somebody completely different at one time. You know, she didn't always have grandchildren or children or a husband. And she was going to dances and buying new dresses, or her parents were buying them for her, you know. So just thinking in light of that we're all individuals before we're anything else, and trying to get at that with characters is really interesting to me. And I don't know if I succeed, but I like to try.
Oh, I think you do. I think you do very, very well.
Thank you.
Now, Lily, who is another one of the main characters and really comes to play in the book, is African American. Was it difficult to write from that perspective? Was it different to write an African American character?
Yes, it was. And there were some sort of built-in minefields in that, because my first draft, my editor, who's great, Kelsey Bowen, we went back and forth about, you know, are we being honest here about this relationship? And do we have too much white saviorism? Do we have too many episodes where the kind-hearted white people are swooping in to save the day? And so I thought about that an awful lot. And then there was one scene that I had just kind of touched on the notion of how little choice Lily had in her current situation. And so it was actually Kelsey's suggestion to really explore that and really wrap my brain around the idea of how Black women and men living in that particular time in the South would have had very little self-determination available to them because of their circumstances. But it was important to show their human dignity and their desire to have that self-direction. And so I did that, and I rewrote the whole book after we talked. And then the mayor of my hometown comes from a Black family out there, and his mom and my mom were childhood friends. But he and I didn't know each other till we grew up. And he was the first Black mayor of my hometown. He's also a minister out there, Theangelo Perkins. And so I reached out to him and asked him would he be willing to read it and let me know if I was basically doing anything stupid for lack of understanding of that perspective. And he was happy to do that and was pleased with the approach that I had taken and felt that I had been sensitive to the characters. But it really took a lot of work, because it's so easy to slide into those tropes and stereotypes that would not have been fair to the characters. They needed to be fully fleshed out and have their own life, and their own life had to matter. And so I built in some conversations in the book between Hepsie and Callie, in between Lily and her love interest so that you could hear that longing for more self-determination that they just didn't have at the time.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ashley T. Lee Podcast. Join me to hear the Bible read line by line and clearly explained. Listen to the Word of God in your car or home or work while it transforms your mind daily. Romans 12:2 says, "Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, which is good and acceptable and perfect." Knowing the Bible can give you peace and joy in this hectic world. Listen weekly to Ashley T. Lee Podcast on all podcast sites.
That's really, really interesting, and I'm sure it was a challenge. Also a challenge, what must have been a challenge, is there are many triggering subjects in the book. There's the racism, there's the sexual abuse, there's all that kind of stuff. And you sort of hinted at this, but including those subjects and those events in your book, did it give you any pause? Did you kind of mentioned that you debated about whether to use them or not. How did that all play out?
Yeah, and I think they're related. I really do. I think it's because they both come down to thinking of another human being as property, you know, is not valued, you know, whether you're talking about racism or sexual abuse, which I don't get explicit about at all. It's more the threat of it than it actually happening. Mm-hmm. And it happens to both races, just the threat of it. And so it's whether you're talking about a person of another gender, a woman, or a person of another race that is in the minority and it has had their power taken away. It's kind of not the same, but it's related. You know, they're both forms of devaluing a human being, you know, and not giving them their worth and their self-determination, their right to choose what does and doesn't happen to them.
So you have mentioned that you have lived most of your life in Alabama. You grew up there. You live there now. We talked about this last time you were here. You worked for Southern Living Magazine and have done writing about the South. As a Northerner who has spent some time in the South, but how would you define Southern culture? What is it?
I don't know that you can, because that's one thing that people don't realize until you travel the South is there are lots of different Southern cultures in that, you know, Louisiana is completely different from Virginia. You know, life in Cajun Louisiana compared to South Florida or the deep South of Alabama, there are lots of different cultures within the South. The Mississippi Delta is very distinctive. Coastal Mississippi is completely different from the rest of the whole state. So I would say that first, that there are lots of really interesting cultural pockets throughout the South. But I think there are some, I don't know if I can define, you know, what brings us together, because there is this sort of undercurrent of Southernness that's kind of the same everywhere. Some of it is just being different. You know, the South has had a different historical experience than the rest of the country, and that can't help but affect the region's character, you know, for the good and the bad. Certainly food.
Yes.
food, music, language. So much of what we consider the music of America, you know, started in the South, you know, country music did. There's some argument about blues. I claim it started in the Mississippi Delta, so I'm claiming it. I know Chicago does too. But, you know, bluegrass music, Southern gospel music, so much of these strong cultural threads started in the South. And it's just, I really can't define it. I really don't. I just feel it, if that makes any sense. And I think most people do. I think they feel something different here than other places. Of course, there's the way we sound.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
Yeah, right. But it's just, I don't know. I wish I had a better answer for you, but it just has to do with some kind of common experience. But at the same time, it takes on different textures across the South. And I do think one thing that you do notice in the South, and I don't know enough about other regions of the country to know it's true, but it is a place where the land shapes the people and the people shape the land in a very big way. And that's something that's very important in my stories, is usually my idea starts with a place, not a person. I start with a place in the South that has something interesting about it, and a time that was particularly interesting, and maybe a situation that I could see happening there. And that's what I start with. And so I love looking at the way that people and place shape each other. You know, I'd probably be a completely different person if I had grown up in Brobridge, Louisiana, instead of Harpersville, Alabama. And, you know, that cotton fields and that whole culture of cotton growing is what I grew up with. If I had grown up on the bayou, it would be a different story, you know? And so I just love playing with that. And I do think Southern people tend to be acutely aware of that, of the way people and place, because place affects everything. It affects what you eat, the music you like, the clothes you wear, the kind of house you live in, you know, all of that. Certainly your accent, the way you speak, where you go to church, you know, whether you're more likely to be Catholic or Protestant has a lot to do with where you grew up, you know, and what faith you were raised with. Or so I just love that interaction. And to me, that's a very strong Southern trait. And I'll leave it at that because I'm not making any sense.
No. You're actually making perfect 100% sense. And even though I'm not from the South, I totally get what you're saying. I've traveled somewhat in the South, not as extensively as you, obviously, but I've seen that. And it is true in the North that here in Wisconsin, we are very different from people, say, from Nebraska or Ohio or things like that. And so You're right. It's all shaped in many different ways. There's a large Polish population around here. And so we're very shaped by that as well, with a lot of the culture and traditions that are here. So very interesting. Yeah. So you have a story shack, as I understand. Tell us about your story shack.
I do. Well, I decided in 2010, somewhere around in there, that I was going to leave Southern Living and freelance. I eventually went back because I was terrible at freelancing and didn't like it at all. But when I first came home, I realized that I didn't have any place to work at home. You know, so I didn't plan all that well for this big freelance career that I was going to have. And so I tried to take over my husband's home office, which is actually in our house, and he did not respond to that very well. I tried to establish office hours, and he finally said, "So my office hours are whenever you're not at home." That seems to be it, basically. So I was just getting into fiction writing, and it's different from magazine writing. I mean, I've always been a writer who needed some quiet and solitude, but when I was doing fiction, any little distraction would pull me out of the story and I would lose work time. And so my poor husband, I would complain that he breathed, you know. And so he said, "You've got to have your own space. You know, this is just it." And so we looked at everything. We looked at these little prefab buildings at Lowe's and Home Depot. And I was just like, "No, this isn't it." And at one point I wanted an actual shed. And he said, "It's Alabama. It's going to get real hot in the summertime." So we were in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi on vacation on the Mississippi coast. And I spotted this little Gulf Coast cottage that was just the cutest thing in the world. And I just went, "That's it." And he threw on the brakes and I got out and took pictures and hope the homeowners didn't throw something at us. But we came home and he drew up a plan for a miniature version of that cottage. And it's only, I don't know, 10 by 12, something like that. We gave the picture of the exterior of that cottage and a basic dimensions and floor plan to a friend of ours who was a carpenter. And he built the story shack for me. And it is perfect. It is my happy place. It's at the end of our house. And it has a steep pitched roof, so it feels bigger than it is. Painted the ceiling of the inside and the ceiling over the little bitty porch a color Southerners call haint blue. It's a tradition to paint your porch roof, the ceiling of your porch, that color. It has a solid back door. The front door has a big window pane in it, and there's a big two big tall windows in front. but the rest of it is solid. So I can look out when I want to, but it's almost soundproofed, so I don't hear anything outside unless I want to open up the doors. And my husband built some display shelves to go sort of around the top of the walls, because that way I can put all of my inspirational things, like old family photographs and things I've collected. I can look at them, but they're up out of the way so they don't take up workspace. And he built me some bookshelves and storage shelves. And my mother got me a hot plate for my coffee cup. And, you know, it's just ideal.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. It sounds like a great place.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
You mentioned that you have a book that you are supposed to be writing.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about what's coming up next from you?
I wish that I could, Liz. I wish that I could. No, it's not quite that desperate, but I've just been very distracted with things going on with my family. No, I want to set a book on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and that is a lesser known southern coast. Even a lot of southern people don't know it very well, because they're either going to Florida or they're going to the Carolinas, you know, or the Georgia coast, going to the Atlantic. But on the Gulf, the Mississippi coast is this string of communities, and they're little towns that are right up on the water. And they've been through some horrendous hurricanes. But there's a spirit down there that is just different. And there's a look that's different, because whereas you think of Florida palm trees, you know, and tropical plants, Mississippi is much more live oak trees. And before Katrina, it was just lined with, you know, 200-year-old historic homes overlooking the Gulf. So a completely different look and feel. It has a little bit of a, I don't know what I would say, a mystique about it, a little mystery about it that I've always enjoyed. And so I want to set a book down there, and I want to have some serious humor in this book. It's dealing with some serious subjects, but it's also, I want it to be fun, because it's a young woman named Edie Gardner who has been through a loss, and she doesn't really know. She's young, she's in her 20s. And so her grandmother, who lives in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, calls her in New York and says, you know, what are you doing up there hurting all by yourself? Come on down here. And so she does. And her grandmother has a circle of friends. Her grandmother's nickname is Punk. And so it's sort of a multi-generational thing of women laughing together and learning from each other and supporting each other. But there's also going to be a little kind of twist in there that sends the women in an interesting direction, I hope. But I want to have fun with the way Southern women talk, especially when no men are around. Their sense of mischief. You know, I want to get at that. I want people to laugh a lot when they read this book. I want them to be moved by it, of course, but I also want them to laugh. And I think part of it's when I was freelancing, I started a blog that I don't write anymore. It's on hold, but I would love to do a book about it or something. But anyway, it was called Going Down to Mama's. And the premise was I wanted people who read that blog to feel like they were with my circle of Southern family, you know, that all these women are around the kitchen table having coffee and talking about all kind of stuff and laughing their heads off and eating. And I just wanted that spirit, you know, in the blog when I started it. And I want to get it some of that in this book too. I want them to have that sort of love dome feeling that, you know, you've been with this group of women that just makes you feel warm inside, even when things aren't so easy.
I'm just smiling at this description. I'm sitting here smiling, and sounds like a wonderful book. So we'll be looking for that, and happy writing on that one.
Thank you. I need that. Thank you.
So if listeners would like to connect with you, find out more about Letters from My Sister, or wait for the next one, how can they go about doing that?
Well, I'm on Facebook. I believe my Facebook address is just valerie.lussey. And then on Instagram, it's just Valerie Lussey. You can find my books at bakerbookhouse.com. There you can get a discount, I think, right now on Letters from My Sister. On Facebook, I started an author page way back But most people drifted over to my personal one, and I decided I was too old for my brain to keep up with two Facebook pages. So I just discontinued the author page. And please friend me on Facebook. That's where I am the most. I'm there more than Instagram because it's easier for me. It's like journaling. And so I do funny stories. I do humor. I do updates on my books. I post when I'm going to be doing an event or appearing somewhere. So Facebook is probably the best way to find me. And I do have a website that's just ValerieFrazierLessie.com.
All right. Well, that sounds wonderful. It has been enjoyable chatting with you again, as always, and we wish you the best with the next book coming up, and we look forward to having you back when that one releases.
Oh, thank you so much, Liz. This is always a joy to talk to you. Thank you for having me.
What a fun time that was catching up with Valerie and hearing all about her book, Letters from My Sister. Just wow, getting rave reviews. It's been out at this point as of this recording a little over a month, and just fantastic. So be sure to check out Letters from My Sister by Valerie Frazier Lussie. You can find all the information about the book, about Valerie, a link to Letters from My Sister all over on the show notes. And those are on my website, which is liztolsma.com. So head over there and check out all that additional information that is there. As I have been saying, we've been reworking things, rescheduling people, moving stuff around just because of some things that I have going on. It's been kind of crazy in my life. And I'm going to be gone to, here's a hint, to Poland for the next couple of weeks, doing some research for an upcoming book of mine, which I am super excited about. But because of everything that has been happening in my life, I did not get any episodes edited and ready to go while I'm gone, unfortunately. I really had hoped to. That was my goal. It didn't turn out that way. And so my apologies. Life has just been happening, and I have literally been running for the past 2 months and just barely keeping my head above water. So what I'm going to do is a first for me, and I'm going to take 2 weeks of vacation. So there will be no show next week and no show the week after that. But if you are a patron, you can catch Misty Beller. She will be here. If you're a patron, her show will premiere on October 16th, that will be available to you. And if you are not a patron, you're going to have to wait all the way till October 18th to hear Misty Beller. But I hope that you will not forget about the podcast. We will be back after this brief hiatus. It's the first vacation that I've really taken since I started this over 3 years ago. So I'm going to go away. I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to catch up on some other podcasts, but I will be back, and I hope you will be too, because I appreciate each one of you. I appreciate the support that you have shown me over the past almost 150 episodes now. I'd have to count. I don't think this is 150. I think Misty's might be number 150, but we're coming very, very close to it. And I just can't believe it. And I am so appreciative to all of you. Thank you so much. And we will see you again in mid-October. I hope you have a great few weeks. Until then, and we'll see you later.